It's, you know, it's Caleb Williams' first preseason game. He played one quarter. You don't want to overreact. You know, you want to keep perspective. Nah, screw that. Hit the music, Robbie. Hit the music. Let's go. Let's go. Fit the man for a gold jacket. Start etching the names in the Lombardi. Ladies and gentlemen, your 2024 Super Bowl champion, Chicago Bears, led by number one pick, Caleb Williams.
Williams slinging it, looking for Keenan Allen, and overthrew it. Williams under pressure. That is a big man chasing him, and Williams unable to get away from Sebastian Joseph Day. Williams gets brought down by an excellent pass rusher in Harold Landry.
You're listening to Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Well done, Robbie Triano. I am Rami Makhlouf with you right up until Cubs baseball pregame taking over these airwaves right around 8:30. Get you ready for Cubs and Dodgers. Jam-packed show for you. Patrick Finley, who of course covers the Bears for the Sun-Times, he'll be here shortly at about 6:20. Andre Ware, former NFL QB, Texans color radio analyst, he'll be here at 7 o'clock. And Derek Klassen, host of the Athletic Football Show, he'll be here at 8 o'clock to talk some Bears and NFL football. You can get in via text 312-644-6767. Tweet at 670. The score at Rami, R-A-M-I-E, is tweeting if you want to comment on the show today. And yeah, that was me, what, Robbie, four weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago?
The exact date was August 11th.
Oh, so a month ago. It was exactly 1 month ago that I was fitting Caleb Williams for a gold jacket and engraving the Bears' names into the 2024 Vince Lombardi Trophy. Okay, maybe carried away a little bit. Maybe, I mean, they are 1-0, right? They are 1-0. They're off to exactly the start, according to their record, that they needed to get off to do what I talked about there in that little clip. You thought you got me, Robbie Triano. You thought that was like, oh, I got you clip of Rami Makhlouf.
No, getting that carried away. That just shows the excitement that you had in the moment, and you can still have that excitement. Caleb Williams can still be a Hall of Famer, but after 1 week, not very good.
Yeah, 14 of 29 for 93 yards and no touchdowns and a bunch of missed throws and a really bad sack for 19 yards that killed a drive like that. No, those aren't Hall of Fame numbers, but that was a nice win, man. That was a nice win. But Robbie, you've been here for many of my shifts here recently on 670 The Score. They let me out of my cage and onto the airwaves once every couple of weeks. And you've heard me say that I'm expecting wins this season, but I'm not expecting Caleb Williams to carry you there. I don't expect Caleb Williams as a rookie to single-handedly carry you to greatness. Not in his rookie year. Someday I hope he gets there. I hope he's the type of guy that you win games because of. But right now, like that's not going to happen. And they pulled out the win Sunday with the dude looking like a rookie, which I said would happen. But I also said I got two major questions coming into this season. While a lot of people refuse to have questions about this football team or any sort of hint of pessimism about this football team, I had questions. I had concerns for everything that they seemingly did right in the offseason. I had questions and concerns. One was, is Flus and by extension Shane Waldron as offensive coordinator the guy? And did Poles do enough to put enough around Caleb Williams to put him in position to succeed while they win, to succeed and develop while they win? Because I expect wins. I just don't expect Caleb Williams to take you there single-handedly. And he wasn't good on Sunday, and you still won. He didn't complete a pass longer than 13 yards. He ended the week one last in the league in yards per attempt, 30th in completion percentage, 27th in passer rating. It wasn't good, and went 2-for-13 on third down as an offense in the fourth quarter. They had the ball in Tennessee territory three times. They kicked two field goals and punted once. That is not what you want in a close game where you get the ball into your opponent's territory and you're settling for field goals. That's not what you want. Now, it's better than turnovers. It's better than what Will Levis did, and we'll get there in a second, but That's not what you want. You need six or seven when you get down there, at least once of three drives into the fourth quarter. And as far as those two questions I just asked, is Flus and by extension Waldron the guy? And did Poles do enough to put Caleb in position to progress, succeed, and for this football team to win? Flus did his thing on defense. I mean, there's very little issue. Now, in the first half, I was furrowing my eyebrow a little bit and going, is this that defense we heard so much about in the offseason? Is that great defensive head coach who's calling the plays that we heard about in the offseason? But I was also just irritated as a Bears fan and probably overreacting a little bit because it wasn't going the way we all wanted week one to go. I was a little irritated with the defense in the first half. But at the end of the day, three sacks, three turnovers, a touchdown, a special teams touchdown on the block punt. Like, Eberflus did his thing. Will Levis was 32nd out of 32 quarterbacks in EPA this week with a minus 1.92 when he faced a blitz. He had a 26.2 passer rating in the second half. They literally, if you've seen the clip, had Will Levis on his knees begging for mercy after that interception to Tariq Stevenson. Like, he dropped to his knees and just stood there and watched the horror as it unfolded for himself and the Tennessee Titans. So the defense did a great job, and you got to give a lot of credit to Flus for that. He's calling the plays. So one of the questions, to some degree, answered. Flus did his thing. As far as Poles and the roster that he put around Caleb Williams as a rookie to sort of pick him up when he has days like he did, that defense was built by Ryan Poles, and a recent pickup in Daryl Taylor really, really paid off with two sacks, eight tackles. He looks like he might be a dude. So credit to Ryan Poles and sort of answering those two questions that I had going into the season, going into week one. But, and it's a big but, it's in all capitals in my notes here, but you're not going to keep winning like that, man. You're not going to keep winning like that. I'm sure you've all seen or heard the stat by now. Teams trailing by two or more scores at halftime who failed to score an offensive touchdown all game were 2-306 since the year of our Lord 2000. 2-306 when trailing by two or more scores at halftime and failed to score an offensive touchdown. The Bears on Sunday made it 3-306. And I was watching that game. Robbie, I don't know if you had the same experience. You're a Lions fan, though, so I don't know if you even remember this game or hold it in high regard the way that Bears fans do. I was watching that game, and as they were making the comeback, I was thinking to myself, this feels a lot like that Cardinals game in 06 that drove Dennis Green crazy. The famous, they are who we thought they were. And it turns out that one of those two in the 2-306 was that game. That's why it had the same feel and the same vibe to me while watching it. So you're not going to keep winning games like that. They gained 148 yards. That's the fewest in a win in the NFL since 2020. It's the fewest the Bears have had in a win since 2006. So you're not going to keep winning like that. You can't count on that. And as far as those two questions go that I'll keep coming back to in this segment and I'll keep coming back to as the season goes on, is Eberflus and by extension Waldron the right guys for this job? And did Poles do enough to put enough around Caleb Williams so that he can develop and succeed and this team win football games while he's doing that? On defense, like I said, Can't complain about what both Flus and Ryan Poles put together. Offense, different story. Very, very different story. Starting with coaching. And this falls on Waldron. But man, if Waldron ain't the right guy for the job, that's an indictment on both those guys that I just talked about. Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles. If Shane Waldron ain't the right guy to be the offensive coordinator, That does not reflect well on those two guys and what they've done for this football team and what they've done for Caleb Williams. And while I was sitting here waiting to go on the air, I came across a tweet from Brian Baldinger, who breaks, and he's great. I know you hear him on The Score often. love watching Baldy break down tape. And he was breaking down the Bears' offense. And a number of times, in like a 2.5 minute clip, Baldy must have said at least 3, 4, if not 5 times in a 2.5 minute clip of breaking down Bears' plays. And as it pertains to Shane Waldron's play calling, I don't know what this is. I don't know what they're doing here. I don't know what they're trying to get done here. And just from a play calling standpoint, too many plays. I remember a 2nd and 2 where they lined DeAndre Swift up 6 yards behind the line and then pitched it out. So he basically had to go 8 yards to get 2. Too many plays where it was 2nd and short or 3rd and short, and you're sending guys, this is one of the things that Baldy pointed out, you're sending guys on these long routes that don't make any sense. And too many times, guys ending up in the same area or zone of the field. But from a personnel standpoint, I'm not sure what they were doing on offense. DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift, Roma Dunze, and Cole Kmet, their 5 best skill position players, were on the field together for a total of 10 snaps. What are you doing? What? I thought you got all those weapons to put them out there and make defenses sort of pick their poison. Make defenses say, okay, well, we got to stop DJ Moore, open things up for Keenan Allen. Or maybe they can put enough resources towards those guys, it opens things up for Roma Dunze. Or they drop 6 and it opens things up for DeAndre Swift. Or all that opens things up for Cole Kmet. Those 5 were on the field for 10 snaps. Gerald Everett got more playing time than Cole Kmet. Make that make sense. Why did you just give Cole Kmet all that money? And by the way, not a polls guy. He could have done the same thing with him that he did with the rest of the roster if you weren't sold on Cole Kmet. And I'm not saying Cole Kmet is great, but the Bears gave an endorsement to Cole Kmet, and Ryan Poles gave an endorsement to Cole Kmet in giving him that contract. And now he's a part-time player? He was on the field for 27 of the Bears' 56 snaps. When they went hurry up late in the 3rd quarter, they kept Everett and Travis Homer on the field and Swift and Kmet on the sideline. Why? And before the game even started, I didn't even understand why Roschon Johnson and Tyler Scott were inactive. That didn't make any sense to me. So those are some questionable personnel decisions, some questionable play calls by Shane Waldron. And then, man, and this is not something that you guys need me to tell you, the O-line was bad. Really, really bad. And I kept thinking back in watching this game to something that Ryan Poles said. This was in his press conference. Do you have the exact date of it, Robbie? I know this was right after they announced the final 53-man roster. Do you know the date that Ryan Poles said this?
I do not.
Okay, that's fine. It was right after they announced the 53-man roster. So after the preseason, they saw things play out. They set their roster, and Ryan Poles is asked about his offensive line.
You know, with Bates coming in, you know, I feel like we've created some depth there and versatility. It's something that has really bothered me for a long time, just in terms of the lack of flexibility that we've had in the past. And it stresses you out, you know, big time going week to week. So I feel like we have more versatility now and competition.
Versatility, competition, and depth. As deep as he's ever had since he's been the Bears GM is what he told us. So deep you have a rotation at right guard in week one? In week one. With the rookie quarterback, with the first pick in the draft, you have a rotation at right guard. Nate Davis had so little credibility, so little capital with you, that he couldn't make it through week one. If you had that little faith in the dude, how are you going into the season with him as your supposed starting right guard in front of the number one pick in the draft? How do you not have a better plan B than the guy who loses the center competition if Nate Davis isn't right, which you knew he might not be in the offseason? And speaking of that center competition, Coleman Shelton looked like a turnstile in that game on Sunday. In the first half alone, every one of these 6 offensive linemen that got a snap had at least 1 bad rep. Every single one of them. And I've seen people saying, well, the Bears' offensive line didn't grade out that bad. In the old Pro Football Focus grades, when all was said and done, they were 11th in the league with an average score of 64. That's out of 100. But the tackles really, really carried that, man. Because the guards, again, out of a score of 100, they scored a 47. And at center, Coleman Shelton scored a 50. The interior, and that's a good interior defensive line that Tennessee has, but you're going to see better. You're going to go against better. And you can't have defensive tackles harassing Caleb Williams like that all season long, man. A, you won't win games. Like I said, you can't keep winning games the way that they won on Sunday. You need better. And B, bigger picture and more concerning, you're going to stunt this dude's development. And maybe even break him. That's how quarterbacks get broken. And I don't mean physically, necessarily. That can happen, too. I mean mentally and their development. They start seeing ghosts. That sack for 19 yards, I don't know that he could have done anything different or done anything better. As soon as he turned around off the play fake, there was a dude in his face. He couldn't throw it away. If he put his hand up in the air, chances are he's fumbling that thing. He had to keep two hands on it and try to escape. And by the time he escaped, there was another dude on his ass. You can't keep winning like this, and this isn't conducive to the development of Caleb Williams. And those two questions that I had coming in are Flus and Waldron the right guys for the job, and did Ryan Poles do enough to put enough around Caleb Williams? Haven't really been answered. Defense looked great, special teams looked great. I got questions about Shane Waldron as a play caller, his personnel decisions, and I have even more questions about the offensive line after week one than I did prior to. That offensive line that Ryan Poles told us was as deep as any that he's ever had. I'm not trying to panic. It might sound like it in my voice. I'm not trying to panic. I'm happy with the win. I'm really, really happy with the win. But as far as the questions I had coming into week one, not answered so great, to be quite frank with you. I have questions about the Bears for Patrick Finley as well. He covers the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times, and he's going to join me, Rami Makhlouf, next, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Rome will still be day-to-day, so I know that will be a question. That's what I have for you right now. And Keenan Allen, his heel, we're going to let him rest up for the day and see where it is tomorrow. Just opportunity, you know, opportunity. You're looking for an opportunity, a crack in the door, you know, because it's a strong receiving group that we feel that we have this year. And again, we still got to prove it. But I would say that opportunity, you know, when that door opens, man, you take your opportunity and run with it.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
As Bears head coach Matt Eberflus, I am Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show with you up until around 8:30, taking you right up to Cubs and Dodgers. We'll talk with Texans color radio analyst Andre Ware coming up at 7 o'clock. But joining me right now on the show, he, of course, covers the Bears for the Sun-Times, also the host of the Hallis Intrigue Pod, and you can follow him on Twitter at Patrick Finley. It is Patrick Finley. Pat, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm good. I think every Matt Eberflus quote should have "woo-ha, got you all in check" in the background. I love the bed there. It's perfect.
It's the perfect vibe. It just fits Flus for some reason. Should we be worried about this the health of this wide receiver room already, Patrick, based on what we heard him say there in the clip?
Yeah. I think that's a fair statement. You know, you've got Roma Dunze, the number 9 pick in the draft. He's very lucky that the injury wasn't any more serious than it was. It's a grade one MCL sprain, which is about the best news you could possibly hope for, you know, given that he was getting MRIs done on Monday. But, you know, he's a guy who's never had any injury before. Something happened. He heard a pop and he got nervous and with good reason. They're calling him day to day. He didn't practice today. I know that they're not going to rush him back. It's not worth it, especially, you know, to go play a game indoors on turf. The next two games are like that. So the Bears are going to be careful with him. You know, Keenan Allen's got a heel injury that the Bears attributed to a shoe problem maybe 2 weeks ago. But keep in mind, I mean, the heel injury is what ended his season last year. We're not that clear as to whether it's the exact same injury. but it's his body part, and that's reason to be worried. DJ Moore spent like 10 minutes in the blue injury tent on Sunday. He came out okay. He said he has a side injury. He's fine. He's not on the injury report. So you know DJ will be out there on Sunday. But, you know, outside of that list, you know, now we're getting down to the Tyler Scotts of the world. You know, he was a healthy scratch on Sunday. You know, DeAndre Carter's a returner. You know, and that's it. That is the list of Bears receivers. So, yeah, there's reason to be concerned.
You know, as a Bears fan, my internal struggle this year has been not to overreact, and not in a good way or not in a bad way, but like, we have expectations, we got Caleb Williams, and so like we our emotions are running higher than they have been in recent seasons. And I ask myself if I'm overreacting when I see Keenan Allen, who, as you pointed out, had a heel injury end his season last year. Is it possible that the Chargers knew something that the Bears didn't, and the Bears got some damaged goods in Keenan Allen in that trade?
Not from a medical standpoint, no. You know, you could sit there, you know, just in, you know, thinking big picture, you know, I'm sure the Chargers, you know, look at his age and sit there and wonder whether, you know, the injuries will keep coming a little more fast and furious. But no, from a medical standpoint, he had to pass a physical in order to get to come here, and he did. There's no worry about that.
Okay, good. I'm glad you put my worries to ease. Talking with Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times here on the Score Evening Show. Rami Makhlouf, your host. I was talking before I brought you on about some of the personnel decisions that we saw on the offensive side of things. We saw Cole Kmet play less than half the snaps. Their five top skill position players and Moore, Allen, Swift, Adunze, and Kmet, they were on the field for only 10 snaps together throughout the game. What did you make of those decisions that Shane Waldron made about the personnel they were putting out on the field throughout that game?
I think in the second half, Shane Waldron tried to run a little bit of Lincoln Riley's offense from USC. You saw a lot of hurry up. You saw a lot of spread sort of concepts there. And, I asked Matt Eberflus about it after the game, and he said that, you know, that's something that Caleb's comfortable with. And I think they were trying to get something unlocked there. I think they knew that the offense had been struggling, and they were trying to see if something could jumpstart it. And when you're in sets like that, Cole Kmet, who's your inline blocker, is probably not your first choice. I mean, Gerald Everett's more of a wide receiver type tight end, if that makes sense. And he's the move tight end and all of that. So I think that's why Cole Kmet's going to be fine. Cole Kmet's going to, I think, end up playing 70% of the snaps. And, you know, I think he and Everett in the right matchups are both going to be on the field together a lot. That wasn't the case on Sunday, but I think it will be. You know, I go back to what Cole said, too. And, Cole's had a lot of targets, and Cole has lost a lot of games. And Cole said during training camp, hey, man, if we start winning games, I don't really care if my target share goes down. And I think that is his belief going into the season that, you know, boy, they have six or seven offensive weapons now. You know, there were times the last couple of years where they had two. So that's just going to happen naturally as well.
On the other side of the ball, not much to complain about, not many holes to poke in what we saw from the defense against Tennessee. How much of that do you think is just a vastly improved defense over the last year or so, Patrick? And how much of that was Will Levis, who's still seemingly trying to figure out the NFL?
I tweeted this in the moment, but Will Levis went full Jay Cutler. The backhand the backhand flip, and you know, it's funny, you look at him and, you know, you watch him in college. You know, I've been calling him, you know, Jay Cutler light and diet Jay Cutler for a couple of years now. And then he comes here and he does something that Jay Cutler would have done. Yeah, I think it's a little column A, a little column B. You know, this defense is really good, and it's not going to get shredded by many offenses. I don't think it's going to get shredded even on Sunday night. But, you know, their ability to take the ball away in the second half of last season was remarkable. And, you know, that showed up when they really, really needed it on Sunday. Now, you know, you look ahead at the quarterbacks they're going to face. C.J. Stroud's pretty good. Anthony Richardson, I think, can be had in terms of takeaways. You know, he's going to do a lot of amazing things, but I think he's going to do some things that show just how inexperienced he is. And then you've got Matthew Stafford, and then you've got Bryce Young. So, I mean, there's an opportunity here before they go to London for the defense to really be opportunistic. And I think they really do have that in them. Again, you know, let's not undersell the fact that Will Levis did something really stupid and said afterwards that it was a boneheaded throw. But, you know, the Bears will take.
Talking with Patrick Finley, covers the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times here on the Score Evening Show. He's my guest for a few more minutes. It's been, I don't know, four or five questions, Patrick, and I haven't brought up Caleb Williams. Obviously, the numbers not great at the end of the day for Caleb Williams in his NFL debut. He's not the first rookie quarterback to have a tough debut, but what out of that was legitimately concerning to you, if anything, from what we saw from Caleb Williams in that game? Or do you chalk it all up to just rookie QB performance?
The accuracy wasn't great. That's concerning. You know, he's a guy who's been accurate all through college, so I don't think this is anything that's going to stick. But, you know, there were just a couple of throws. I go back to, you know, there was a series, I believe, in the third quarter where he, you know, threw high and wide in the flat for DeAndre Swift, and then on the next play threw low and away to Roma Dunze, kind of up the seam. And, you know, he's gonna make those throws. But really what was concerning was that he was missing them the other day. You know, beyond that, you know, you look at the list, and I tweeted this out a couple of days ago, but, you know, number one overall picks making their first ever start. You know, John Elway had a passer rating of zero. Eli Manning had a worse passer rating. Terry Bradshaw had a worse passer rating. You know, him being really bad on Sunday was not disqualifying for him to end up being a pretty good quarterback. So, you know, small picture, he knows he needs to be more accurate. He was talking today about how he needs, you know, there's probably six or seven throws he'd like to have back and a couple of dropbacks that he rushed. I think that showed really good self-awareness on his part. And, you know, I do think he'll get that sorted out. And at least, you know, he's kind of, you know, he'll clear 100 yards for sure coming up.
He's going to need the offensive line to be better, though, if he's going to do those things. Is he not? I mean, I'm not even sure what's going on at right guard. Is that just a gradual benching of Nate Davis, or just sort of phasing him out until Ryan Bates is back to being 100% healthy? What exactly is going on at that guard position?
I view it as a swift kick in the butt for Nate Davis, trying to motivate him, trying to get all they can out of him. Because you know what? For all that's been made about his practice history and the fact that he doesn't practice a ton, they really do like him on Sundays a lot of the time. And they really need him to be at his best, given what they're paying him for years for $30 million. You know, you're working him back at the end of camp. You know, you wonder whether Bates could end up being a candidate at center here as well. Coleman Shelton took that over when Bates got hurt. And, you know, it's kind of hard to change that in stream here. You know, if Shelton
We're losing Patrick. That phone signal is getting pretty bad. I have one or two more for him, Robbie, if you could try to get him back on the line for a couple more minutes. But that really is concerning to me, man. And I was talking about it in the previous segment. I don't know how you go into this season with that across the middle of your offensive line with questions across the middle. And I know Tevin Jenkins has been real good. He wasn't Sunday, and the guy has consistently had injury problems since he came into the league. You didn't know who your center was coming into the season, and now you have a rotation apparently at right guard. Got Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times back with me, Rami Makhlouf, on the Score Evening Show here on 670 The Score. That to me, and I was saying this in the segment before I brought you on, Patrick, a guy consistently being pressured from the interior of a line, they start seeing ghosts, and that can stunt a quarterback's development if they don't get the interior of that offensive line figured out.
Yes, especially if you're a quarterback who is not particularly tall. Caleb Williams is 6'1". You saw the batted passes on Sunday. We've seen them all throughout training camp. You know, I think it was Drew Brees and the Saints who popularized the idea that if you're going to play a short quarterback, you better be strong at center in the two guard positions. And the Bears weren't particularly strong on Sunday. You know, we were talking about Coleman Shelton. He's a guy who got the center job kind of by default when Ryan Bates got hurt. And, you know, I'll be curious to see whether Bates can make a push there if Nate Davis reacts the way the Bears are hoping that he'll react and, you know, regains control of that right guard job.
Now, as far as Sunday goes, what concerns you, and that's a really good Texans team that they're going to be going up against, man. What concerns you the most based on what you saw week one against Tennessee and what you know the Texans can do?
Boy, they have two really good edge rushers, don't they? And Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. That concerns me. You know, I think that you'll really see the Bears tested on the outside. Now, the Titans, I think, have one of the better defensive lines in football, especially on the inside. And I think the Titans have one of the better offensive lines in football as well. They've used their last two first-round picks on offensive linemen. So I think the Bears will have a little bit of success kind of running behind the center and guard and playing up the middle in a way that they didn't last week. But, boy, those edge rushers concern me. C.J. Stroud concerns me. He is a unicorn. He's, you know, one of the only people ever to be great as a rookie quarterback. And, you know, you put them on turf, you know, they can play the way they like to play. They can play fast. I don't think it shapes up well for the Bears. So, you know, I'll say this. If this were in the second half of the season and at Soldier Field, I would have a very different opinion of this game. But, you know, where we are right now, where Caleb is in his development, and where the Texans are in theirs, I think it could be a long night for the Bears.
Yeah, and I don't expect you to completely, you know, overreact or change your expectations or predictions based on 1 week, Patrick. But was there anything that you saw in week one that maybe made you think about week two a little bit differently or the first few weeks of this season? Like you said, this is maybe a different game if it's later in the season and it's at Soldier Field. Did you see anything in week one that changed your perspective on how the Bears might look here in week two or the first half of the schedule?
I thought the Bears would be able to run a little better. You look at DeAndre Swift. I think he was 10 carries for 30 yards. But one of them was that 20-yarder at the end where he hurdled the dude. You know, otherwise it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
Sledding there. I guess after the last couple of years with Luke Getsy, I presumed that the Bears would be able to run the football effectively. That's something that they've been able to do even when their pass game's been horrible. And that really wasn't the case. So that makes me a little nervous. I think if you're going to win a game against the Texans, I think you're going to have to ugly it up a little bit. I don't think you want to race them to 30. I think you'd rather play them in the low 20s. And, you know, I thought that a good run game would be kind of the smartest path there for the Bears. It needs to be better than it was on Sunday, because if they run the ball the way they did on Sunday, it's not going to go very well.
That's Patrick Finley. Check out his work covering the Bears in the Sun-Times on the Hallis Intrigue podcast and on Twitter at Patrick Finley. Always appreciate the time and the insight, Patrick. Have a good night.
Hey, you too.
And he joins me on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. We'll hit a quick break. We will get back to some Bears talk with Andre Ware, Texans color radio analyst, coming up at 7 o'clock. But right after this, I'm going to say something about the Cubs that just a couple of months ago I did not see myself saying. You'll hear what it is coming up next. Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show right here on a Wednesday night.
Here comes the 3-2 pitch. Swinging a high fly ball deep right center field. Back is Carl Armstrong near the fence, leaping up. He made the catch. He took a home run away from Max Muncy, and the Cubs win the ball game. Pete Crow Armstrong with a dazzling display of defense tonight. He jumped up. He may have had the glove up above the top of the wall. And that's the way the ball game ends.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
As heard right here on The Score, your home for Chicago Cubs baseball with Pat and Ron. I am Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score. Score Evening Show taking you right up to game three of that series tonight as the Cubs go for the sweep of those Dodgers. Baseball coverage on The Score, by the way, is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. I'm sure a lot of Cubs fans were in the same boat as me last night. I was silently celebrating that one to not wake up the house, just fist pumping and oh yeah, there you go. That was an awesome win, man. And it got me thinking something that I didn't think I'd be thinking about this Cubs team. And I wanted to word what I'm about to say very carefully. And I learned this largely from, well, just experience, but listening to Lawrence Holmes over the years and listening to him talk about radio and how to do it and how to frame things. you want to really carefully pick your words. So I was thinking about this Cubs season after that win last night, and I was like, this season is starting to feel, and I couldn't find the right word for it, because I don't want to say successful. It's not successful unless they manage to sneak into the playoffs, then maybe I could call it successful. So I didn't want to say successful, and then I was like, positive? Is that what I'm feeling? Is this starting to feel like a positive season for the Chicago Cubs? And I was like, I don't know that I could go as far as to say positive necessarily. And the word that finally I landed on as far as this Cubs season and a way to describe it, how I feel about it, this is a productive season for the Chicago Cubs. Or maybe you could tell me if it is. 312-644-6767 if you want to shoot me a text. And we will get back to the Bears with Andre Ware, color analyst, former NFL QB for the Houston Texans. But could you characterize this or frame this as a productive season for the Chicago Cubs? And let me explain what I mean. First of all, I didn't expect this to be a team that contended for a World Series. That's where we got to start, is like my expectations or your expectations for what this baseball team could be this year. I didn't think it was a team that was going to contend for a World Series. I thought they could contend for the division, and they're not doing that. The Brewers are running away with it, but the Brewers also a lot better than I and a lot of other people thought that they might be. Even people who had higher expectations, the highest of expectations for the Brewers, I don't think they were this high. I expected this season to be a step in the right direction towards building something that's good and sustainable. A team that will get to the point where we can talk about World Series and stay there. And being relevant in September, playing relevant baseball in September, and on pace to finish with what looks like 86 to 88 wins, that's a step in that direction. That is a step in that direction. And along that way, you found Shota Imanaga, who's going to get some Rookie of the Year votes and was just amazing last night on a big stage, not just that it's Chicago and Los Angeles, but the Asian media, the Japanese media had descended on Los Angeles for Shota and Seiya Suzuki and, of course, Shohei Ohtani. So there were a lot of eyes on that, and a lot of eyes back home where he's from. And that there was a lot of pressure, and he shined, man. He was amazing, as he has been throughout the season. You also acquired what looks like your third baseman, Enesok Paredes. That's a positive. You answered one of the questions. And man, you heard the highlight, the clip coming out. We are watching a star rise in PCA, man. And I think even better than a lot of us thought this kid could be. Maybe better than what the Cubs thought he could be. When you look at what he's done now offensively since sort of finding his footing at the major league level, this dude, and I heard Ian Happ on the midday show with Bernstein and Holmes talking about what PCA does for a lineup, man. He is a game changer, obviously with the defense, and you heard it, you maybe saw it last night with that play to end the game. Also, two or three other highlight plays. I was watching SportsCenter last night. He was in the top 10, I think, three times with catches that he made in that game, saving the Cubs runs. You're watching that dude absolutely blow up, and that could be a major, major development towards what I'm talking about, of building something that is good and sustainable. Not to mention finding Michael Bush along the way, a guy who's playing gold glove level first base and has had an OPS around 800 all year. And there were some bumps in the road with this next thing I'm about to mention, some huge bumps in the road. Bumps in the road that have you now chasing the Mets and the Braves, where otherwise you'd be right there neck and neck with them. You found some bullpen arms in Pearson and Hodge and a couple other guys. You found some bullpen arms along the way who look like they could contribute down the road to something that's good and sustainable. And I know a lot of you are listening to me right now, and going, yeah, but they did this last year, kind of, didn't they? That is true. That's and it's up to you whether you want to believe what your eyes are seeing or what your ears are hearing. Right here on 670 The Score, your home for Cubs baseball. It's up to you whether you want to believe it or you think it's fool's gold. But watching this team, man, and watching what they've done here over the last, I don't know, 6-7 weeks of making this push that they've made, again, the word that I finally landed on is that this is starting to feel like a productive season for the Chicago Cubs towards that goal, towards the end of building something that's good and sustainable, of building a team that can get in the discussion for a World Series and stay there for a number of years. You found what could be an ace. You found your third baseman. You found a what looks like could be an all-star level player at a premium position in center field with PCA. You found a first baseman. You found some bullpen arms. And you're going to finish the season with 86, 87, 88 wins. I don't know if I'm just deluding myself. I don't know if this is just me rationalizing what is probably going to end up being a disappointing season if you had your heart set on playoffs, which I kind of did. So I don't know if I'm just like rationalizing it and trying to make it seem better than it is, but those don't seem like nothing. All those things that I just listed off don't seem like nothing. And by the way, to quote the great Rocky Balboa, nothing's over. Nothing's over to translate. There's 17 games left, 4 games back. And yes, Fangraphs gives them a 1.9% chance to make the playoffs. But I don't know. I look at it and I like their chances a little bit better than that. The Cubs' remaining schedule has a 4.74 win percentage. After this game with the Dodgers tonight, they have one series left with the winning team. That's the Phillies. Outside that, they got 3 with the Rockies, 3 with the A's, 3 with the Nationals, 3 with the Reds. Those are very winnable games. The Braves have a 5.10 win percentage. Again, Cubs 4.74. Braves a 5.10 win percentage with their remaining schedule. 4 with the Dodgers, 3 with the Mets, and 3 with the Royals. And the Mets have the toughest schedule left in the National League. 7 with the Phillies, 3 with the Brewers, 3 with the Braves. So those two teams are going to beat up on each other a little bit. I look at the schedules of these two teams, and I know I'm not saying it's a lock by any means. Don't go and put any money down because of what this guy said. But that feels better than 1.9% that the Fangraphs has given them to make the playoffs. They got some cookies on their schedule. And the teams that they're chasing in the Mets and the Braves, they got some tough games left, man. Some tough series left. Especially the Mets. This can be done. But even if it's not, productive season, I say yes for the Chicago Cubs. You can chime in at 312-644-6767. I'll try and squeeze in a few of your texts later on if you want to get in on it. And like I said, Cubs baseball coming up tonight as they go for a sweep of those Dodgers. First pitch at 9:05. We'll have a pregame for you at 8:35 right here on 670 The Score. Right after this, color analyst for the Houston Texans, former NFL QB, Andre Ware will join me, Rami Makhlouf, on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.